Welcome to the Dynamics Hot Dish, the podcast where Ashley Steiner, Allie Nelson, and Liz McLennan dish up the latest news and insights about Dynamics and the Power Platform. Join us to explore business applications and low-code development with tips, tricks, and real-world experiences. So grab a seat at the table and let's dig in.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming back for another episode of Dynamics Hot Dish. Just to get us started today, I would like to remind everyone to like and subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. As a reminder, you can find us on YouTube, Spotify, and directly on our website as well. This week, we're bringing you a second part to our series on Azure DevOps. We got a lot of feedback from you all from listening to our last episode, and it sounds like we provided you with some really good tips. So I'm really excited that y'all listened to the first episode. And in the second episode, we're going to dive into some more details, like sprint configuration boards, things like that. So just taking it a little bit deeper into Azure DevOps. And in our next episode, we're going to talk about ADO one more time. So we can't get enough of it. We hope you can't get enough of it. And you're in for some more treats and nuggets as we talk about Azure DevOps in our next two episodes.
Yeah, Allie, we were talking about this off camera before we jumped on about how we found that it kind of really resonated with project managers. Our last episode, and I think obviously Azure DevOps kind of leads that way, but there's so much value as a consultant as well. So I really hope people are finding that it's not geared just towards our project managers or people organizing projects, but I'm not a PM. I would never be a good PM, but I use ADO every day, right? I'm in there jumping in and out of work items, user stories, pointing things. So it's definitely used across all, like I would say all roles in a project.
100%. And that's why I like to view it as a collaboration tool, right? It's not just a project management tool. It's truly a team collaboration tool. And last time we talked a lot about the different work item types. And I think that in itself just speaks to all the different people you can get using the tool. So you may have a project manager who's really driving people to use it, but you also have folks like business analysts, product owners who are coming in writing requirements. And then you might also have end users who are coming in and performing testing, reviewing the requirements and making sure that the product is built to their specifications. So absolutely, we'll dub it as a collaboration tool.
Yeah, I love it. So you said today we're going to keep talking about ADO. Do you kind of want to prep everyone for where we're going to talk about today?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, last week we dove into work item types, which is really important foundational knowledge on how to get started in ADO. And again, we'll keep using that acronym because Azure DevOps is a mouthful. So you'll hear us say ADO a lot. And where we're really going to live today is talking about sprints, and we'll start talking about maybe how to organize sprints and then how to get them set up in ADO to help manage your products or projects. And then also working in boards and how that relates to sprints a little bit. So kind of taking it a little deeper other than just worrying about work items, but looking at now that we have all these work items in ADO, how do we keep track of them? Where do we find them? And how does your team stay organized to make sure that they're getting their tasks and other work items done on time? So, you know, the first thing that is going to happen when you decide to work in sprints is your team is going to have to determine what your sprint cadence looks like. Ashley, what have you found typically works for you as like a really good sprint cadence for some projects?
3 weeks tends to be, especially in like, I would say in a development consultancy partner kind of role, working things in a 3 week sprint where you have 2 weeks of like development and configuration, working with the client back and forth, and then you have a week to deploy at the end. So adding that additional week to move all of that into, you know, UAT or production, it kind of lends a little bit easier than trying to rush in 2 weeks with also a deployment. When I'm working as an end user, I typically do sprints on a month-to-month basis just because it's easier for a business to think about things like, what can I get done this month? You know, oh, it's the 15th of the month. I have half a month left. What can I get done? So I think it kind of depends on which angle you're coming at, like who you are, if you're an end user or a partner. But those are the two that I have found the most successful. What about you, Allie?
Yeah, so I'm with you. I'm a fan of the 3 week sprints. I have tried to do 2 week sprints in the past, and I do operate in 2 week sprints often once a project is up and running. Truthfully, it depends how agile you can be. And I don't mean that in the sense of like truly following agile practices. I just mean being agile in the sense of the word, of like how quickly can your team adapt and work together and get work done and get it out the door. And then it also boils down to sizing of your requirements. And if you want to try to get your requirements all done in a sprint, if you're okay carrying them forward, just basically organizing as a team and determining the best way for y'all to work together. Also, I think that's the second time I've said y'all in this podcast, and it's just coming out, and you're the one that lives in Texas, and I am not, and I don't know why it keeps coming out of my mouth today.
I know in the Midwest, or at least in Wisconsin, we would say like either you guys or yous guys. Like that's like the y'all and the all y'all down here in Texas. I don't know what people in the, well, you're from Wisconsin, so you would know. Yeah. So that's really funny. I was like, what about me as Southwestern today that you're like y'all? I agree. So I think I found that those 2 week sprints are a little rushed, especially for the customer. So even if you as a project team can keep up with the work and the development and able to deploy, customers tend to, I don't want to say work more slowly, but I think it works with their cadence of being able to keep up because 2 week agile sprints, it is a sprint. Like when you say sprint, it's like that 100, maybe it's a 50-yard dash, right? Because it's crazy. Like it's really quick and fast. So I found that 3 week sprints work better with the client, like from the client perspective, more so than the project. Because to your point, Allie, you will only move as fast as your client will. So if you're depending on your requirement to do testing, to provide feedback, to demo, things like that, and they're not ready, available, don't have the time, then that's going to slow down your sprint.
I 100% agree with all of that too. And you called out testing. And so there's typically user testing involved, and there might be QA testing involved as well. And when you're trying to have that really big push towards an end of a sprint of getting the development work done so testing can take place, in 2 week sprints, you're often trying to cram testing in like the last 2 days, unless you really plan it out and say, like, you have a week of development, then a week of testing. But then just doing a week of development a lot of the time isn't enough time, you know, especially when you're working on multiple things at once. It's really hard to like push that hard to get as much work done in that time frame as possible. And so I agree. I think that 3 weeks is kind of the sweet spot. I have worked in places before where they try to push 1 week sprints as well. And it's totally just a different ball game. It's for like very, very like quick turnaround. Like, all right, let's just get these small enhancements in place. And it truly is just like mini t-shirt sized requirements. And
Got
then
it.
anything that's a little bit bigger is getting carried over from sprint to sprint a lot of the time.
Got it. Okay. I was like, oh my gosh, a 1 week sprint. That feels like my admin days where I could just go in and do whatever I want, whenever I want. But as like a project team, could never imagine doing a 1 week. The other thing I was gonna say, so you're talking about like the testing time and doing things and deploying in those last 2 days when you're doing 2 week sprints, is I hate deploying on Fridays. So in that 2 week sprint, either you're ready by Wednesday or Thursday, or you're deploying on a Friday. And I personally don't like it because what customer wants to work on Friday or Friday evening or Saturday morning to test? And you should never go live without your customer testing. And so I just think it's more conducive if you add that third week because you could, go live on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You have just a little bit more time and flexibility, and it just tends to work with people's schedules. Unless you're one of those crazy people that do prod deployments during the day, wouldn't recommend it. Always after hours, in my opinion, but to each their own.
And to your point as well, there are some times where you have to do a deployment over a weekend. If it's going to be a really big deployment, a lot of smoke testing or unit testing is involved just to make sure that it went into production okay, then maybe you do want to do that over the weekend so you're not up until 1 in the morning making sure that everything is ready for the users the next day. So there are times, but I'm with you. So a lot of the times you can set up sprints to run like Tuesday to a Tuesday or Tuesday to a Monday, Wednesday, something like that. I'm with you. Middle of the week tends to work well. And it's also hard to start a sprint on a Monday, I think, too, when people like come in and on a Monday and you're ready to go, but it's also much easier to pick up where you left off from Friday instead of trying to get everyone like, okay, so here's what we're doing this week and getting everyone up and running. So I know Mondays can also be tough to start sprints too.
I love that you said that because somebody today just said, and I'm gonna laugh when they listen to this episode because they're gonna know I'm talking about them, said, why are we starting a sprint on Wednesday? Sprints should start on Monday. And it made me pause and be like, do they have to start on Mondays? Like, they don't have to. Like, you can pick whatever day you want to start a sprint. You just got to stick to your 2, 3, 4, whatever your time is. I don't know. So I love that you said that, Ellie, because I don't think that there's one day that does. And now that I think about it, like, I think a Monday is a terrible day to start a sprint because, like, you're coming.
Think about all the Monday holidays.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah.
So, like, if you have off on a Monday or off on Fridays, a lot of people take off on Fridays as well. I feel like the way things fall, a lot of the time you always have one of those days off. So it's really hard to like end a sprint or start a sprint when a lot of people are out of the office too. And so I'm a proponent of midweek sprints. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, start your sprint, end the sprint.
I love it, Ellie. And I'm so glad you said that because today it did make me pause. And I love that that was said today. And I can't wait for that person to listen to this and be like, whoa, I can't believe I'm being talked about on the podcast. But no, it's so true. I think that... when you think about it logically like that, you know, nobody wants to start something brand new on a Monday. You kind of want to wrap up and then start midweek. Yeah, I like it.
Right. And then to kind of circle back all of this to ADO and why we're talking about sprint configuration is because when you're in ADO, you can go down to your project settings and into the project configuration and actually set up sprints in ADO. And it's good to have the type of conversation that you and I just had, Ashley, before you go in and do this, because it can be a pain to try to change things around, because once you have things closed out in certain sprints or allocated to certain sprints in the iteration path, then you have to go and update things. And anyway, so it's really good to have that conversation first, and then you can actually go in and pick the dates that you want your sprints to run. And you can call them whatever you want, you know, sprint 0, sprint 1, sprint 2, iteration 1, iteration 2, whatever you want them to be. And you can actually assign day periods to them. Mm-hmm. So I like doing that because then when you start using like the boards area or the sprints area, you can assign your requirements or your tasks to those different sprints. And it really helps you keep track of what you're supposed to accomplish within that time period and just gives you an added bonus of being able to report within specific dates.
Well, you can also, and I'm probably going to get the name of this wrong, but you can kind of get your work breakdown, right? So like, are you meeting trend to actually accomplish all of the user stories or work that you have in the sprint? And if you don't tie things to a date correctly through the sprint configuration, like you said, Ellie, you're not able to get like the benefits of that reporting that ADO offers to see if, you know, however, and I was always taught this, like every company is going to be different. Every team is going to be different for how many points or t-shirt sizes that they can take on during a sprint. And you're not going to know what your magic number is unless you have that reporting to see, okay, we tried to do 50 and that was too much, and we tried to do 10 and that was too little, right? So without that kind of like that, what is it called? Burn down. Yeah, so without that burn down reporting, like it's hard to find that sweet spot number for your team.
Yeah, I agree. And then as you're setting up your sprints as well, it really helps to have updates throughout. Again, people call them different things, whether it's your stand-ups or check-ins or however you want to word those, but basically checking in with the team, pulling up the sprint, checking your burn down, seeing what types of work items are getting accomplished within that period, and then starting to make the determination if you're going to get everything done within the sprint that you have configured. And again, that's why it's nice to put dates to it and then also start looking at like how quickly people are getting their work done or if they're assigning hours to them and what percent of the hours are getting done, so on and so forth. But then you can have conversations with your team and say, okay, you guys, we're halfway through the sprint. I only see we got 10% of this work done. Is there going to be a period where suddenly we're just going to close all these tasks and these requirements because they're all dependent? But it really helps you manage your projects and keep an eye on like where everyone's working. And again, working within sprints is great in itself. So you can kind of box things together and say, this is the stuff that we have to get done during this time period.
Yeah, those are the fun conversations when somebody's like, oh, I've just forgotten to close all my stuff, and then it goes down out of nowhere.
So. I know, and it's funny too, because that's what I'm thinking as we're talking about this, and I know we said that we have some best practices about ADO coming in our next episode, but so maybe this is a little bit of a sneak peek, but that is an issue, is trying to get people to use it, and I think that what really helps people use ADO is whoever is in charge of it, in charge of ADO, in charge of the project, whatever, a PM most often, Scrum Master, whomever you're working with, but I have found that it helps to show the team what reports you're looking at. So if you're looking at burndown, just share that with the team and say, hey, when you're not closing your stuff out on time, this is what our burndown looks like. And it really makes it hard on me to manage the project. So I know that's one thing that I would suggest that came to mind as you were talking about that.
Yeah, I know. That makes me think of so many. I'm going to take notes like while we're talking to talk about on our next one for best practices. Because, I mean, that's true. These are all things that we've learned, right, while we've been using it. I always call them lessons learned so people don't have to learn them themselves. But, yeah, so yeah, I think that that's a great call out. And definitely more things like that will be coming in the next episode. We're taking a quick commercial break to talk about Community Summit, the largest independent Microsoft ERP, CRM, Power Platform, and AI user conference on the planet, which is happening in Charlotte, North Carolina from October 15th to the 20th. Why should you join thousands of Microsoft users attending? The agenda is for users by users. You will accelerate your learning with 500 plus education and training sessions. Connect with over 4,000 users sharing tips, tricks, and tutorials. Your registration includes all meals and receptions. And there's more exciting news, the new Generative AI pre-conference. This is the perfect opportunity to understand where, why, and how AI, specifically Generative AI via Copilot from Microsoft, should be applied to drive business results. Leverage the unmatched value of Summit North America. Visit summitna.com. That's SUMMITNA.com. We'll see you in Charlotte.
Absolutely. So how do you typically operate when you're in ADO? Do you usually use the sprint view? Do you usually use the boards view, backlog view? Where do you typically tend to go?
Oh my God, Allie, in my notes, it says, ask Allie, do you work in the sprint view or the boards view? Literally right, like in my notes, it says that. So we're totally on the right track because I was wondering which one you do. So I'll answer since you asked first. Sure. And then I'll let you. So I was actually talking to my PM today because he listened to our last episode, and finally, and I was like, hey, why doesn't our sprint view work how it's supposed to? And so he probably spent a ton of time today and then finally had the answer for me. So I work in the boards view because I have to, because the sprint view doesn't work. But so I guess for it did work for some time and then it stopped working. But like as an end user, so I do work with an end user company. We do things from the sprint board because we'll have like user stories, but tasks will be assigned to a bunch of different people within one user story. So in that situation, the sprint view works better. I personally like the boards when I'm a contributor on a project because then I can just narrow it down really easily to my user stories and not be lost in what other people have assigned to them. So I think it kind of depends on the purpose, like why I'm in there, what role I'm filling as, you know, as part of that project. I think that also has a big part of it as well. What about you?
Yeah, so I will say that I most often work in the sprint view because I'm a full believer in getting sprints set up in ADO and then trying to add your work items to it. And so in the sprint view, you can look at it as a backlog or you can look at it as a task board. And I typically go to the board view within sprints. So like for everybody listening, I'm going to try to describe this and maybe we'll get a screenshot on the website to help you out. But basically on the left-hand side of ADO, when you get in there and you click on boards, there's a whole bunch of different ways you can view work items. And if you click on boards with the green icon, and then you click on boards again below that, it takes you to basically a Kanban board of all of the items that you have open. You can view it as epics, features, requirements, I most often work in like requirement or user story view. And basically it shows you everything that's not necessarily in a specific sprint. So that's a really good area to go if you think that you may have had something from a previous sprint that never got closed out. I know there's always the fear of like things getting lost in ADO, especially if you're working within sprints, because if you go to that sprints and then you use the task board view in there, it's always going to default to showing you the current sprint. So if you, you know, go in there 2 days after a sprint closes, you're not going to potentially see things that didn't carry over from the previous sprint because your sprint board has moved on. So there's always ways to find the work items that you're looking for. So usually as I'm approaching the end of a sprint, we'll want to go into that sprint board, take a look at everything that's open. Again, like Ashley mentioned before, either do the, oh shoot, I got to mass close everything, which hopefully you're not doing, but it comes up, let's be real. Or, and then planning on like, okay, I actually am not going to get these work items done. I need to change the iteration path and actually move them forward onto the next sprint. So I guess that's my hybrid answer to you is I like working in the sprints, but the task board view within the sprints.
Got it. And so I use the board, but then filter down to the current sprint.
There you go. Multiple ways of getting the same thing.
Yeah, it's just kind of opposite. And I think that goes into, we said this last time, that there's no one right way to use Azure DevOps. Like when we were talking about the work items or what the work items mean to you and your company. Like I think that as long, because everyone's brains work a little bit different, right? And so making sure that you're viewing your items and what you need to get done in a logical way that will help you accomplish everything and get it done in the time frame, I think that's the most important.
I will say too, I do like the backlogs view. I know some people, it may not work for you.
I've never used it, Allie.
So for me, that's honestly where I start projects is I go into the backlogs view and I often start there because it organizes it like a tree. So I have all of my epics up top, then my features, then my requirements. And it really helps me visualize what the heck I'm doing as I'm adding more requirements. And it helps me find like where I need to keep things grouped together. So that's where I work. I get started in that backlogs area typically, and then I'll move over into the sprints area and start working there. Like once the project is kicked off and you're cruising along and getting stuff done.
So I bet as a project manager, they probably live in the backlogs too, trying to prioritize and bring things into like the next sprints. Cause I'm guessing like whenever like the PM that I work with, whenever he brings up Azure DevOps, he has the backlogs board pulled up. And I don't use it ever.
Yeah. Again, personal preference, right? People, it's all in here. There's a bunch of different ways to view information. And again, the main purpose is this is a collaboration tool. So whatever works best for your team is the best way to use it, truthfully. Okay. So I guess the other thing on these board views that's really important to talk about is the columns in which stuff is organized. Right. So yeah. When you come into the board view, there's a bunch of different columns. I don't even remember what's technically quote unquote out of the box for this because I feel like I always come in and
I wrote it down.
Oh, okay, good.
I wrote it down. Yeah. So the state categories that are built into the system that you cannot remove are proposed. No, sorry. Nope, that's different. Are new, active, resolved, and closed.
Okay.
New, active, resolved, and closed. You cannot change those. You can add to them, but you can't remove.
New, active, resolved, and closed. Okay. Yeah, because ultimately what those statuses are driving are the columns that you see in those board views that we were just talking about, right? So think about what Microsoft Planner, Trello, there's all these other tools that kind of work within that board view as well. So I bet a lot of people listening are kind of familiar to this concept. But essentially what you do is you work from left to right, right? So you start with like your new status on the left or proposed, whatever you're working with. And then as that requirement moves through different categories, like of different states or different people working on it, then it moves kind of from left to right. And also I should pause there because as I said this, I wanted to see what your thoughts were. But when I'm working in like the boards view, I work in requirements or user stories. Do you do the same thing or do you use like tasks or something else?
So I do user stories, but I add tasks to the user story to like add up how many hours that we're expecting it to actually take. So to see if that matches up with the points that we gave it.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Okay.
Do you not use tasks then? Like you just have a requirement on a user, like how do you do it?
So it depends, famous words, that it really depends on the project. I've done it both ways. Most of the time what I'll do when I'm working in like a board view is just have the requirements in there so I can see what state the requirements are in. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can get down to the task and I know you can have like the requirements stay on the left-hand side and then kind of see the tasks that are associated with it and see like what state the tasks are in. So I've done it both ways. But a lot of the time I'm really concerned like where the requirement is. It also gives you that really nice summary on the little card view of the tasks that are associated with it and tells you like 2 out of 9 are done. And it tells you like 7 are left and stuff like that. So it gives you a really good summary on that little card view within the board's view. So I typically just look at requirements or user stories there.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So I guess from like a board perspective, I only look at the user story. And then if I want to work on my tasks, then I open it up. I use like that Kanban of like we've added a column for ready to review, right? So when something's active and being worked on, and then we move it to ready to review with the client before we like move it into a resolved state, that kind of thing in case they have feedback. So like, yeah, I do that from the user story level. Now as an end user, I'm more task focused. I think it really depends. I love that word, Ellie. You're using it. I'm using it. It really depends on the purpose of what you're tracking. If you're more user experience driven or if you're more task driven, and there's no right or wrong to that. So.
Agree. And I like your call it on, it depends on who you are as well, because I like the user stories in that view because that's what I'm working on as a business analyst, as a product owner, you're working in those requirements. That's where you live. As a developer, you're probably working in the tasks. You reference the requirement to understand it and read it. But then your day-to-day after you go through that process is updating the tasks with your hours or marking it complete and changing the status as you're working on it. So it totally, yeah, I agree. It depends on who you are on the project as well.
There's also nothing more satisfying than dragging your items like into the resolved or closed column.
I agree. So I think you said one of them, but other than the new, what's your typical cadence of statuses that you work requirements or user stories through?
Honestly, just the out of the box, new, in progress, and then whether it's resolved or closed. And I always use the resolved as like it's being moved into a UAT environment, but it hasn't been like moved into production. So that's how I've always used resolved, is it's ready for UAT testing. We've passed like the demo and the approval from the customer. Now it's ready for UAT testing, and then because you can't get rid of resolved, it's a default one that you can't remove, and then you have closed.
See, and I like what you just said there too. It did, yeah. And I have seen it as simple as that. Keep it that way. And I've had some really intense options as well. And really, this ties back to what we were talking about before too, of like, just define it out with your team before you get started, run it past everybody. Does this make sense? And what you really want to do when you're trying to set up statuses is think about what is happening to that requirement or user story, right? So you start out, you're creating it. Then what? Are you asking somebody to review it? What happens after they review it? When somebody starts work on it, what status do you want it to be in? How do you know that they're done with it? Right? Because this is a collaboration tool, your PM or whomever's running the project doesn't want to have to constantly check in with everybody and say, where's this at? And there's ways you can run reports out of the system and giving updates based off of status. So I think really defining what your statuses are and then making sure your team is sticking to like moving them through the right categories is a best practice for sure.
I would also make sure that you keep your statuses a little general, right? Don't make them so specific. Like if you need to get down to a very super specific scenario, that's where I've used tags in the past, because I don't think there's a limit on how many tags. And I know we're from the Midwest, so I think most people would say tag, I think.
Is tag. Right.
But when we say tag, we mean tag. Anyways, our nice Wisconsin accents here. But that's where I see tags really come into play, where you can like denote like, okay, it's in review, but it's been moved to UAT, or it's, you know, client, or it's ready, but we skipped this one development. I don't know, right? There's a lot of different situations and scenarios of where you can use a tag to kind of fill in some of that gaps of where you maybe don't want to create like another state or status, but you still want to be able to report or build queries on it or provide that information. So I would say try to use less states, as like as few as possible, and then fill in the gaps with a tag.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of detail, I'll be honest. So I like to have detailed statuses, but I have also seen team members get super confused when you have too many of them. And it's really hard to get people to adapt to a process if they don't understand it. So yep. I agree with you. Just think about it. And, you know, I've seen tags. I'm self-conscious now about how I'm saying
it. I'm sorry. I got made fun of a lot after, like, in college for how I, like, bag and tag. So I'm sensitive to the fact that most people, I think, say bag and tag. It's weird.
Yeah, a bagel. I don't know. I'm proud of it. Actually, we should be proud of it. We're proud of it.
Oh, I'm 100%. I still say it.
Anyway, so if I'm going back to the tags, they also show on that board view as well, which is fantastic. So your tags show up there. Like you said, you can query on them. And I've seen them really simple as like requires follow-up or ready for UAT or, you know, awaiting response. You know, you can put anything in there that you want to. And once you save a tag, sounds like a tagline, but once you save a tag or add one, it's there. So you can use the same lingo on other items as well, which is nice. So you don't have to start fresh every time. Use kind of the same punctuation, capitalization, all that stuff for consistency. Or just say like move forward to the next sprint. You can add a tag and then you can remove it. So if you want to add a note to your PM of like this one's moving forward or move to next sprint, they can query on those, they can find them, they can move them forward, and then they can take off the tag once they're finished.
So I know we're coming up on time, Allie, and I know we have one more, at least one more, maybe more, little maybe preview for folks. Topic on ADO. So is there anything from like a sprints board kind of setting up that actual usage of the system that you want to wrap up with before we get to our topic for next time?
No, I think that this could be a good segue too, as we're talking about setting up queries, but we'll dive into that a little bit more later as well. And once again, the time has flown by on this. I think once we get started talking about it, it's obvious how much we like this tool. So I'm just excited that we're doing another episode to share even more information with everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to Dynamics Hot Dish, your go-to podcast for all things Dynamics 365 and the Power Platform. If you found this episode helpful, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to follow us on social media for even more insights and updates on the latest trends and best practices in business applications and low-code development. We'll be back soon with another delicious serving of Dynamics and Power Platform goodness. Until then, keep innovating and building great solutions.